Ah, yes, people buy the thousands all over the country, maybe even millions. Stood in line and watched the Indiana Jones movie, The Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls. Stephen Mailer holds 3 degrees in the sciences, a trained field archaeologist and prehistorian, and his fascination with ancient Egypt began at the age of 8 and has guided his education in spiritual work all his life. Since 1992, Stephen has been a student of Hakim and written several books, The Land of Osiris, and From Light into Darkness, The Evolution of Religion in Ancient Egypt. Stephen has also researched the phenomenon of crystal skulls since 1979. Here he is, Stephen Mailer. Hey, Stephen, how are you?
I'm fine, George, and it's great to talk with you again.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Hey, this story that these researchers claim to have conducted about the 2 skulls, the one from the British Museum in the Smithsonian.
Yes.
They do not believe they're authentic. There are many more skulls out there, but what's your take on that?
Well, we can go into detail about that. And first of all, I just want to thank you for the opening. I stood in line, too, today.
Oh, did you? Did you like the movie?
I loved it. You see, there's going to be very different opinions on the movie, which already you've said and which I've already gotten emails about. But people who have not done the background research will not realize what a great job George Lucas did in this producing this movie and the research that he did. You've got Roswell. You've got the Nazca Lines. You've got aliens. I don't want to give away too much of the plot of the movie for people who haven't seen it, but one of the themes of the movie, interestingly enough, synchronistically enough, was written about by my co-author, publisher, and good friend, David Hatcher Childress. He wrote a book called Lost Cities and Ancient Mysteries of South America in 1986, mm-hmm. So a long time ago, where he talks about the legend of the lost city of Akakur. Now, this is basically a legend that deals with 3 ancient cities called Akakor, Akanis, and Akmin. And according to a book that was written by a man named Karl Brueger in the 70s, these were very, very ancient cities, civilization, pre-Incan, built Machu Picchu, and the legend is the cities were founded by extraterrestrials. So what George Lucas did is he just threw in the crystal skull story into the mix, and that's what the movie's about. And then that's not giving anything away as far as the plot goes.
Well, and, you know, I just think with Harrison Ford and with the music, it's fun.
I absolutely loved it. In my opinion, because I'm biased, I can't be objective. I love Indiana Jones is my favorite fictional hero, of course.
Now, Sean,
I think it's better than the first 3 movies combined. It's
really,
really well written.
Well, that's a big statement, Stephen. Then.
Yes. I mean, and I was fortunate. My wife and I, we stood in line, and we ran into a couple old friends of ours at the movie, and someone you've interviewed, Jonathan Goldman.
Absolutely.
International sound healer, musician, and his great wife, Andy Goldman. And they absolutely loved it, too. But people will think it's superficial. Some people think it's lame. People think it's off the wall. You don't know the research that George Lucas put into this movie unless you've done the work.
Well, it's fascinating. I'm going to go see it, hopefully, with my daughters in another week or so.
And I think who really almost steals the movie is Cate Blanchett. She's so great.
Well, crystal skulls, though.
Yes.
What about these 2? Are they real or not?
You know, George, first of all, let's discuss that. When they call them fakes, well, what does that mean? If you're calling a crystal skull a fake, then it has to be made out of plastic or glass or wood. But if a skull is made out of crystal, it's a crystal skull. But what they're saying is fakes are the stories that they're ancient.
Yes, that they weren't made by the Mayans or the Aztecs.
I tell you the truth, George, I don't think any of them were made by the Mayans or Aztecs. The Aztecs made, not the large ones. I had a source, a Mayan priest. We'll get into that story because it is the same story that you talked with Richard Schafsky a couple of weeks ago. Richard Schafsky is in my book. I introduce him. I have to say, George, right from the start, that I've been blessed because I've been able to walk in 2 worlds, in both worlds. I have, as you said, degrees in the hard sciences, and I've also been into mysticism, metaphysics since the 60s. So I've been able to walk in both worlds, and I was blessed to have studied and worked with the 2 greatest scientists who ever researched crystal skulls, Dr. Marcel Vogel and great, late, great F.R. Nick Nocerino.
Yes.
Now, Dr. Vogel had a PhD in physics. He was a senior scientist at IBM. Very few people knew more about crystals and crystallography than he did. He also was a Rosicrucian and a mystic, so he walked in both worlds. But the greatest source in the paranormal, parapsychology, occult, metaphysics, whatever term anyone wants to use, was the great Nick Nocerino. And he is the one I learned the most of. He was the dean of crystal skull researchers. I read a whole chapter of him in my book, and I mention him in every book. To me, anyone who talks about crystal skulls writes a book about crystal skulls, and Nick Nocerino's name is not mentioned, has not done their work.
He had the Sha-na-na.
Sha-na-ra. Yeah. Sha-na-ra. Yes. And
I think Sha-na-na might be a rock group. I'm
yeah,
not sure.
It was. You're right, George. You're dating yourself. Without a doubt, Sha-na-ra is an ancient artifact. I don't care what people let this. But, you know, the Smithsonian skull is what we would call. See, Nick Nocerino was the one who established the scientific method for dealing with these things. He categorized them into three categories. What we would call contemporary, that's a skull that's carved within the last 100 years. What we would call old is a skull that's within the last couple of 100 years. But what we call ancient is a crystal skull carved over 1,000 years ago into a skull. So what we're talking about is the Smithsonian skull, the British Museum skull, have now been classified as being old because they believe they were carved in the middle of the 19th century. And how they do this, the scientific method is electron scanning microscope. When you look at the skulls under the electron microscope, you see straight, even lines that usually indicates. And this, I'm going to criticize this methodology in a while, but I'm giving them how they date these. They would say if it's very straight lines, they can see evidence of tool marks, so they think that they're carved with diamond-coated lapidary wheels, diamond industrial diamond drills, which was done in Europe in the middle of the 19th century. So that's why they say, aha, they're not ancient. An ancient skull would show uneven carved marks, uneven polish under electron scanning microscope, and that's how they would be ancient. So the scientists who are talking about this, and I can say her name. Her name is Jane Walsh. She's an anthropologist at the Smithsonian. She says they're all modern fakes. But believe me, Jane Walsh does not have a clue of what she's looking at and what crystal skulls are about.
These skulls that you, when you look at them, Stephen, even though I think they look beautiful the way they've been made, they look kind of scary. They look spooky, don't they?
Well, George, that's interesting. You know, I did a lot of research. And I can talk in detail about the research I did. We call it psychometry, mm-hmm. where people would register their impressions, opinions, and we would do questionnaires and do that. A lot of people had that kind of reaction with some of the skulls. Now, George, I can tell you in particular, the first one we're going to talk about, and Lex was great. If people want to just click on the website, they can see the pictures we have up there. What we call the Mayan crystal skull, and that's the one that you discussed with Richard Schatzky. That skull was used by the later Indian native tribes called the Toltecs, who conquered the Maya and actually used the skulls in sacrifice. When they would rip open somebody's chest, take out the still beating heart, they would actually put the crystal skull in the cavity. So it recorded a lot of those vibrations. I mean, these are record keepers. They record crystal skulls, and crystals can record every person, every event that occurs among them. So those in there. So when you say creepy and scary, a lot of people do get those impressions because some of the skulls were used for the so-called dark side negative. But this is not true of Max. This is not true of Sha-na-ra. This is not true of a lot of the skulls I've seen. But some of them do give people that impression, so you're right.
Sha-na-ra, of all of them I have seen, looks the roughest in terms of its carved out look.
Exactly. And this is what we're going to get to, because the British Museum tested these skulls in 1996. They had their skull, the British Museum skull. They had the Smithsonian skull. They had Max and Sha-na-ra. They had an Aztec skull. They had a couple modern carved skulls. When they did all the tests, they came back with the results saying, yes, the Smithsonian skull is modern or old. It's recent. The British Museum skull, yes, that's the art what you're referring to. But when it came to Max and Sha-na-ra, they said no comment. Now, what kind of a scientific response is that?
Yeah.
Either you have test results or you don't.
Exactly.
But they could not deal with it, George. They could not say that they were modern because Shana Ra and Max, and I examined them from great detail, many, many hours. They are unevenly carved. They are unevenly polished. They are definitely carved by hand. And so Shana Ra is an amazing skull, probably the oldest one I've seen. But I mean, I couldn't differentiate between Max and Shana Ra. They're very, very ancient. They are the oldest I've seen, and they were definitely carved by hand, not by any machines. And they may have been used diamond tools, but they were not done by high-powered tools. The skulls would have shattered.
Have you ever seen one of these skulls light up in a very strange way?
Yes. Ooh. They have an aura around them that was recorded with the Mitchell Hedges skull by Frank Borland in the 70s. We have done a lot of experiments with the skulls, with different lights, with candlelight. They definitely, once they interact with mind, and there are definite ways to activate the skulls. We'll discuss breath and sound, two of the main, light, color. And once they're activated, once they start to work and interact with the human mind, they do give off colors and auras.
Now, when you talked a little bit about some of your tests and experiments, let's go back. When did this happen and where were you?
Yes. I was fortunate to be a staff research scientist for the Rosicrucian Order AMARC, A-M-R-R-C, which stands for Ancient Mystical Order Rosicrucis. At the time was 1978 to 1980, and at that time in San Jose, California, it was the world headquarters. One day, November of 1979, of course I will never forget it, I was in the office and we got a call from the curator of the Rosicrucian Egyptian Museum. He said that he had been contacted by a man, I identify this man in the book, the man's name is John Zamora, who was acting as an agent for some people in Mexico and had an artifact that he wanted us to authenticate and perhaps exhibit in the Rosicrucian Museum. They asked me, was I interested? Of course. And I was known then as the archaeologist, the prehistorian, sort of the expert in antiquities for the Rosicrucian Order. So what was brought to me first was a couple of photographs. And that was the Mayan crystal skull. And I had heard about these things. I had read things about them in a book, but knew very little at that time. So I said, well, yes, we're very interested. So I contacted John Zamora, and he brought in the Mayan crystal skull for testing January 4th, 1980. So it's been 28 years I've been in research. We had an incredible session. That's when I met Marcel Vogel, who was a Rosicrucian, who taught me a lot about how to activate. He had already worked with the Mitchell Hedges skull and the British Museum skull. And then we had another gentleman like Michael Campbell. I can go into details about these. And then we had another session where I did a lot of psychometry with a lot of people. Now, at the Rosicrucian Order, we did not call people psychic. We loathed that term, actually, because when you say someone is psychic, it's like saying someone is unique than anybody else. No, we used the word sensitive. We're all born.
And you could say some people are more sensitive than others.
Absolutely, George. We all have that ability. It's an innate ability. Some people have activated these senses. Others, it's still dormant, but they're there. And this is what my teacher Hakim teaches. We're born innately with 360 senses. So people that we call sensitive are just operating with more of the innate senses than the rest of us are. But we all have these abilities, George. So we had people who were tested, who were on record as being highly sensitive. I brought them in, worked with it. We recorded all audio, what everybody did. We used lasers. We used color. That's some of the photographs I have in the book show the laser tests and color tests that we did. And we recorded all this and then filled out questionnaires afterward. Nobody was present for anybody else's session. And then how you do this scientifically is you see what highest percentage of hits you have, what you mean are. What people say they hear, this, they see this color, they hear this sound, they see this scene. And then you record it. And anything over 50%, particularly over 60%, is scientifically significant. It's not just accident. It's not just chance. And we've had people, I mean, we had things like 70, 80% would report certain things. So you know that's significant. And again, Mayan scenes, scenes of ancient cultures, ancient civilizations was predominant, people who worked with all the skulls. And I worked with many of them, as we can talk about. And as the pictures show that Lex has posted up.
What did you find to be the most fascinating thing during the testing and research?
Well, I was totally amazed, George, as an archaeologist. And I realized that academic science cannot deal with these things. That's why when you have these debunkers and they say that they think they're just dismissing the subject, but they don't understand crystal. They don't understand crystal skull. I mean, we would not be where we are today if it wasn't for crystal. You wouldn't be talking to me on the radio if it wasn't for crystal. We wouldn't have our computers if it wasn't for crystal. I could go on and on and on. And the ancients knew about crystal. The ancients, what I'm talking about.
How did they know unless they were told?
Uh-huh. You go in there, George, and I knew you would. Yes. We're going to deal with that subject, your favorite subject, the extraterrestrial.
It is. It's way up there on the list, Stephen.
Well, I'll tell you, though, George, I say that when you talk about crystal skulls, you have to talk about both aspects, extraterrestrial and interdimensional. Because what we're talking about is that I won't say I believe. I'll say I know. It sounds arrogant, but I'll say I know. Everything has consciousness, from rocks, trees,
yep,
crystal, bones, everything.
What?
There's consciousness throughout the universe. So there are consciousness, George, that are not physical like we are, that are in different dimensions. And, George, that's one of the themes of the movie. This is why people who don't understand this will not understand what George Lucas was saying in this movie. Again, I'm not giving away the plot, but it is so synchronistic that David Hatchett Childress and his wife, Jennifer Bohm, they decided to use the subtitle on our book, Astonishing Portals to Man's Past. One of the themes of the Indiana Jones movie is that crystal skulls are interdimensional portals. And, George, I stand here with everyone listening as a witness that is absolutely the truth.
And what's the significance, Stephen, of the skull? Why wasn't it made like a bear or a pyramid or anything like that?
Well, a simple reason that many people have come up with is the fact that these skulls, crystal itself, were the ancient computers. This was the first person that told me this was Dr. Marcel Vogel. Nick Nocerino later confirmed that.
Okay.
These, before we had writing, before we had symbols to record information, crystals were used as computers. Again, a crystal skull will record, and I can give you Marcel Vogel's scientific theory, how crystal stores energy and information. We'll go there. But crystal skulls record every person, every event that occurs around them, and it can be accessed. We can bring that information out. So what do we use to store information? Our brain and ourselves, because I believe in cellular memory, but our brain, where is the brain housed? In the skull. Now, to ancient people, a skull was not a symbol of death. It was a symbol of eternity. The Mayans actually used the upper cranium of the skull without the jaw as the number infinity.
Stephen, we're going to talk more about these crystal skulls when we come back with our guest, Stephen Mailer, co-author with David Hatchett Childress, The Crystal Skulls. We'll be back. We've got Stephen Mailer as our special guest. Hey, do you have the After Dark newsletter yet? Well, pick it up. You get 13 issues for the price of 12 when you call 1-888-727-5505, or you can go online at coasttocoastam.com. Stephen, in your opinion, how were the skulls carved from the crystal?
Well, again, for the ones that they say are old, maybe carved in the middle 19th century, they were carved with high-powered industrial tools with diamond tips, industrial diamonds, and lapidary wheels, but not Max and Shana Ra. They were carved by hand. Now, how, George? I think it's like the mysteries of how the pyramid.
That's true. That is true.
But I believe by diamond tools, but carved by hand. And there's no doubt, everybody saw this. Marcel Vogel, again, was the first one to tell me this. Polished with a grit, either diamond sand, have to be quartz sand. It has to be something. Quartz is 7 on the Mohs scale, M-O-H-S. That's how they rate crystal. Diamond is 10, of course. So to carve crystal, quartz crystal, you have to have something 7 and above. So usually diamonds are carved. So I believe they were carved by hand. But interestingly enough, mind played an important part. And this is one of the ways that we know we can identify an ancient skull from an old skull or a contemporary skull. It's the intent of the carver. The ancient skulls were carved by masters, shamans, priests, whatever. incredible carvers, and they were carved by hand. I believe water pressure, an ancient kick wheel was involved. The mother piece of crystal would be spinning, water pressure, diamond tools, and carved and polished by hand with a diamond grit. But how? I mean, we had the great world-renowned geologist, Dr. Robert Schock, who involved with alternative Egyptologist John Anthony West, has redated the Sphinx. He examined Max. And he had no idea how Max was carved, because the uniqueness in Max is that he's five different pieces of crystal fused together under tremendous heat and pressure, like in the middle of a volcano. And Robert Schock said quite accurately that if any high-pressure power tool was applied to Max, he would shatter into five separate pieces. It had to be done by hand.
And did they have to polish the crystal into the skull for it to work? Or could it have worked in the bulky, natural form it was in?
Excellent question. And it is both. The same thing why people use crystal balls. And this is part of the occult tradition. Again, we talk about scrying or crystal gazing, how people could look into a crystal, see scenes in it, maybe make predictions. Again, you talked with Richard about prophecies and predictions. So just a piece of crystal can do that. But it is something about the skull, George. You're right. When it's carved into a skull, it seems to have a better connection with the human mind, because we know it looks like us, we know it resembles us, and there is an easier interaction when it is in a skull form.
If today they made like little crystal skulls for keychains and things like that out of real crystal, would they have some kind of magical powers to them, or, you know, do you have to take them somewhere for them to work?
Both. The answer is all of the above. Crystal itself, any piece of crystal, is ancient. Crystal is formed under tremendous heat and pressure. It takes millions of years ago to form. So any piece of crystal has power, has energy, can interact with mind. But when you take a crystal skull to a power place, to a place where a lot of the skulls were, where they were supposed to be used, where the great energy centers of the earth, particularly where there's running water and a natural source of crystal, of course it energizes the skull. And then when you work with the skulls, like we've been taught to do by toning, chanting, using sound, by deep breathing, as Marcel Vogel demonstrated to us, and Nick Nocerino demonstrated to me, by using deep breathing techniques and toning, you're able to go into the crystal and access the information. So it's all of the above. Crystal itself is amazing. As Nick Nocerino, I quote Nick Nocerino many, many times in this book. He wrote me a letter in 1999 where he said, all crystal is ancient. All crystal has energy. But the ancient skulls had something else special. With they were activated, they were brought to power places, ceremonies were done, chanting was done, interaction with mind that activates the crystal to a higher degree.
He may have been one of the greatest researchers of the crystal skulls, don't
he
you
was
think?
The. Nick Nocerino was the man. There was nobody. And what's very interesting is that Nick used to hate the term crystal skull expert. He never considered himself one. He told me, don't use that term. He said, beware of people who call themselves crystal skull experts, because another great quote of Nick's is, the more I research crystal skulls, the less I know about them.
People listening to us on WABC right now in New York would love to know that Nick was a Brooklyn native, wasn't he?
Yes, sir, and so was I. That's one of the things
I
shared.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Brooklyn.
Okay.
And Nick was in the Navy, George, like you.
Yep.
He actually was in Navy intelligence in World War II. He actually was aboard minesweepers. The minesweeper he was on was called the YMS-13. It was accidentally sunk by the French Navy in 1944, and it was covered up, George. There's an old cover-up. The U.S. government never reported that it was sunk because they didn't want to embarrass the French government.
How did he get interested in crystal skulls?
Great story. The story of Nick Nocerino's life. Someday, his wife, Chris Nocerino, would like me to take the project on of actually writing a definitive biography of him. But she was wonderful. The Nocerino family has been very kind to me and has shared a lot of information to me. Nick was born into an Italian American family under the veneer Roman Catholicism, like you, in 1926.
Mm-hmm.
He grew up under that veneer, but his maternal grandmother was a Wiccan high priestess. Now, people who don't know about Wicca, you can just Google it. But Wicca is a very ancient metaphysical tradition. It goes way, way back. We don't even know how old it is, at least to the Middle Ages in Europe, and particularly in Italy. So from a young age. And here's a very interesting story that I present in the book, which I learned from his wife, Chris Nocerino. When Nick was born, he was born on the kitchen table in his family home. All his maternal grandmother and the whole coven of Wiccan priestesses she had served as midwives. As soon as Nick was born, they took the placenta and they did not throw it away. Because of Wiccan tradition, they took his placenta, put it in a glass jar, and she placed some small quartz crystals with it. When Nick was 7 years old, he was told not to wear this, of course, as a youngster. When he was 7 years old, he was told to go to this lady's house, who was a very close friend of his grandmother. She was given the title comadre. It also, an Italian term, and for people who know Italian, she was called a strega, a stregone, which means a Wiccan high priestess. She took him to the house. She showed him his placenta, gave him those crystals to wear around his neck. They were called his birth crystals. He was taught about crystals from her, how to use crystals for healing. And, of course, Nick himself was born with a high degree of sensitivity, one of the greatest I've ever met as far as what you'd call a sensitive. And in fact, it wasn't until he was an adult, until he was in the Navy, that he realized that other people weren't as sensitive as he was. He thought it was just natural. So he learned from crystals at the age of 7. At the age of 9, an incredible experience happened in his life. He was walking up the stairs in his Brooklyn home to the second floor. There was a large mirror on a landing on the second floor. As he walked up, he looked into the mirror, and he saw a skull in the mirror. And he immediately realized that it was not a human skull. It was a crystal skull.
Interesting.
He then saw a snake come out of one eye. He then saw a snake come out of the other eye. Then the snakes disappeared, and a jaguar came out of one eye. And that was his first experience with crystal skulls when he was 9 years old.
And he never stopped.
And then he discovered, he came across his first actual crystal skull in southern France. During World War II, he had landed in Normandy. He was right after Normandy, right after D-Day. He landed. He went to southern France, and he came across a crystal skull owned by a French farmer. And that was his first experience.
Did this literally become his career eventually?
That would be an insult to the Nocerino family, yes.
Yeah.
And no. Nick Nocerino was the first man to ever get a teaching credential in the state of California to teach parapsychology in the early 50s. So, yes, crystal skulls were a major part of his life, but that's not all he was. He was a man that wore many hats. He was an original ghostbuster, a person called in to investigate hauntings. He constantly was in contact with spirit, people on the other side. Again, physical beings who've passed on and interdimensional energies. So he was in the original In Search Of series, which people may remember. He was on the Johnny Carson show. He was on many, many, many different venues, known as a master parapsychologist, paranormal. He was known as a teacher of teachers. Many of Nick Nocerino's students have gone on to write their own books on crystals. So it would be really unfair to say crystal skulls were his whole life, but they were. But it was everything paranormal.
Let's move over to Dr. Marcel Vogel then. How did he get interested in this?
Well, Marcel Vogel, again, being a Rosicrucian, was a very old Rosicrucian, so he became interested in metaphysics and mysticism soon after he became a physical scientist. He was, again, senior researcher, senior scientist, IBM, master of liquid crystals and crystallography. He was called in by Frank Dorland, who had the Mitchell Hedges skull in the late 60s, to look at that skull. He worked with it. He then went to England and worked with the British Museum skull. And he was the first one to say that, after Nick, that skulls were computers and language decoders. And so I was fortunate, and I was working at the Rosicrucian Order, the man. And it's amazing, George, that so many people I talk about in this field have all passed on. By default now,
it's happening, Stephen, in the Bigfoot arena as well, in so many other areas, too, that these great researchers have just passed on.
I know. And, George, one of the things you learn is my brother told me, who's 5 years older than I am, the older you get, the more people drop away from you.
That's true.
But I was going to bring another name up. The man's name was Dr. George Bellezza, who was head of the International Rosicrucian Order Super Science Department at the time. He has since passed on. A great, great scientist, metaphysician, mystic, and a master of the brain and the central nervous system. He called in Marcel Vogel because he knew him. So Marcel Vogel came in and demonstrated these breathing techniques and sound techniques, and I recorded it, still have the audio tape, and gave out just tremendous information. And so then when I got to see the second skull I worked with, the amethyst crystal skull, I also called in Marcel Vogel. And that's when I first met Nick Nocerino in 1983. I called him in his home in San Pablo, California, told him I found out that he had been the one who brought the Mayan skull into the country, had worked with the Mayan priest whose name was Francisco Reyes. And so when I told him that Francisco was there with another skull, he just came down from San Pablo to San Jose, California. And that's when I first got to see Nick Nocerino work. And there's some priceless pictures I have in the book of Nick Nocerino working with the amethyst skull. And I learned so much from just watching him work.
Let's go back, way back to these days of antiquity. How were the skulls used?
Many, many ways. Many, many ways. It's like we talk about the Great Pyramid. We'll never know how many different types of energy and functions the Great Pyramid had. Again, computers. First of all, to store information. They were used for healing because crystal, as we know, it's piezoelectric. If you put any pressure on quartz crystal, it produces a coherent electrical charge. So it works with the electromagnetic spectrum, and it can transfer energy. One person like who was a healer would put their hand on a crystal skull, put their hand on the person who was ill, and work through channeling energy through that person to stimulate their immune system to start a healing process. So definitely used for healing. Joanne Parks, who you've interviewed, mm-hmm. Great interview, George. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Great friend of mine since 1989. She's going to be writing her own book documenting specific healings that Max has done for people. Incredible stories. And as I said to my good friend Jonathan Goldman today while we were watching Indiana Jones, the Rosicrucians teach what we call an accident or a miracle is just the operation of a law that we don't understand. So these miracle healings are just the fact that the crystal skulls can direct energy to our immune system. So they were used many different ways. Now, again, they were used for the dark side, George. We have to go there. I mean,
Let me ask you about that then. How were they used for the dark side? I mean, and why?
I don't buy the story that F.A. Mike Mitchell has just said that they could will death. However, crystal skulls were used to manipulate people. Again, you know, through times through history, we've had people interested in power and greed. Certain priests, certain later priests of the Maya, perhaps the Toltecs, would use the crystal skulls that people would come into a tent or a temple. They'd be lit by candlelight from behind. Just like you say, they'd be eerie, spookified. They would think them as crystal skulls of gods. A Mayan priest would be hidden away somewhere and would be talking, and people would think the crystal skull was talking, and they would tell people what to do. Look, we're going to war with the village next door. Get ready. And people would listen. So the crystal skulls were used to manipulate people and control people for the so-called dark side. But the overwhelming evidence, the overwhelming energy that you get from Max, Shannara, and some of the ancient ones, they were only used for positive.
For the positive, for the healing, did the sick have to touch the skull?
No. All they had to do was be touched by the priest who was touching the crystal skull.
Okay.
Transference of energy. But people use crystals today for healing. I know many chiropractors. I know many alternative healers that they will put crystals on your chakras, your energy centers, or where you say you have pain, where you say you have problems. And, you know, they've been shown to be efficacious in healing. Again, the academic scientists we talk about, the Jane Walshers of the world would say this is all nonsense. But they have no experience in this field at all.
It is an amazing, amazing thing that happens. I have to ask you about Atlantis, where there were rumors that they had a huge crystal skull, that when it sank, the island sank, the right. continent sank, the skull did, and that's why we have the Bermuda Triangle problems.
Well, actually, people think there was a giant crystal, not necessarily a crystal skull, but a giant stone, which some people call a two-eye
yeah.
stone, that actually, yes, and that actually is, there was actually a man named Dan Brown, who dove in the Bahamas in the 60s, it came across what he said was a sunken temple. He went into the temple and he found two golden hands holding a crystal ball. And he's convinced that there is a crystal somewhere down in the Bahamas, and that's the source of the Bahamas.
Well, you might have already found it, Stephen.
Possibly.
Yep.
Possibly. Again, you know my story of Atlantis. I don't use that term. I believe I use the term global maritime culture. The only reason I deviate from the whole story of Atlantis is how Atlantis is used is that there was just this one culture, highly advanced. Cataclysms came. They went all around the world and then taught ignorant people in Africa how to build pyramids, et cetera, et cetera. We don't agree with that. I, instead of saying Atlantis, again, I prefer global maritime culture. My co-author, David Childress, has stated a great statement that the oceans in ancient times were not barriers, they were highways. So, yes, there were crystal energy, crystalline technology over 10,000 years ago in advanced cultures all around the world. Atlantis, yes, one.
If sunlight hit a crystal in a certain way, could it be used as a weapon? Could it be used for good?
Both. Crystals could be used as weapons. Sunlight, especially a skull like the Mitch's Hedges skull, and that's the people scroll down to that photograph, they'll see a picture there that was taken by a man named Norman J. Benzie in 1986 for Honor Mitchell Hedges. It is actually the fourth picture down. That is in sunlight. That is the Mitchell Hedges skull has so many different prisms, pipes, different aspects of it that can cause light to refract in different colors, and that's sunlight. So yes, sunlight hitting a crystal skull could blind someone, could throw energy at someone, but I would think, again, George, I like to be more on the high side, more for healing, more for positive.
I think so, too. It's all in the hands of the beholder, I guess.
Exactly, George. Exactly. Just like the skulls with the intent of the carver, how crystal skulls are used and the intent of the user.
Stephen, next hour, let's talk about the ET presence and their involvement with this.
Certainly.
This work, The Crystal Skulls, where do you get the book?
The book is, people can go on Amazon. It'll be back ordered. But if people want to get the book immediately, I recommend they go to the Adventures Unlimited Press website. Go on New Books. They'll find it there. They can get it immediately. I have copies myself. People can contact me if they want a signed copy.
All right, very good. Stay with us, Stephen, and we'll be back in just a moment. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com as well. Just send me an email, and I shall get it. Stephen Mailer next. The Crystal Skulls continues.